something wrong with your shelter. Do not attempt to adjust your picture. Do not attempt to adjust it. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Simple flight. From ultralights to the edge of space, the Wright brothers flew in 1903, and aviation is still finding new ways to advance. Aviation is fun. It's business, and it's full of opportunity. Join Al Waterloo as he talks with amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely fantastic news from the flight deck tonight. We have just been cleared for takeoff, and we are tonight's show has been brought to you by The Fix Papa Whiskey Kilo. If you don't know where that is, you can pull out your JEP chart or your for flight and look that up. Good evening, everybody. My name is Al Waterloo, and welcome to the show. And happy National Aviation Day, Mr. Mark Eppner. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I didn't know it was National Aviation Day, and I guess I should be embarrassed about that.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's a, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. That's a pilot confession, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, great way to start the show. Hopefully it goes up from there.
Right, absolutely. So how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm listening to this turbine wind up in the background there. It gets me all going. There's nothing cooler than that, especially to a piston pilot.
Right, exactly. Well, sometimes flying the turbine airplane, you want to get back to the piston, then you're ready to get back in the turbine after that. So it's a lot of fun. But you know what? I'm kind of in the mood for a little upbeat. I need a little uplift. How about can you make me laugh tonight?
There's a TV show about that. Wait a minute. Can you make me laugh?
I can.
The last 2 weeks, I think I've caught you maybe a little off guard, but you've done a great job at making me feel like I actually can tell a joke. So,
well, you know what, you absolutely can, and it's pretty awesome.
By the way, I have to tell you, the 2 weeks ago, I told the joke about Santa, right?
Right.
And you laugh pretty hard, and as I've told other pilots, they laugh pretty hard too. I told my son that joke today.
Uh-huh.
And he's not a pilot.
Right.
And, he's 20-something. I've got two boys. And they say, wait a minute, he shot the the reindeer. I don't get it. They don't know what losing an engine is and all that. So you really have to know your audience.
Yeah, right. But, losing an engine off of, there goes Dasher, off of the neighbor's roof. Don't worry, it's the FAA helping. But I've got a joke for you, a pilot joke, and it's a real zinger. It's short.
I like short.
And I've been thinking about it all week.
Oh, great.
And anyway, this is kind of...
Make me laugh.
Okay. All right. So... What's the difference between a duck and a co-pilot?
A duck and a co-pilot. I could come up with some things, and I think probably not appropriate for radio, so I'm going to just say, I don't know, Al. What is the difference between a duck and a co-pilot?
A duck can fly. All right. Yeah.
Spoken like a PIC, a guy that sits in the left seat.
Exactly. That's whenever I'm flying with somebody, I tell them that.
Well, what's interesting is I truly think that the best humor comes from what's in real life.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so, I tend to fly a lot, and not always in general aviation, an air carrier. And I was made aware of, a major airline.
Right.
Recently had a special offer. They're doing everything they can to fill the seats, as you know.
Right.
Right. And so they had this great promotion that was 50% off for the spouse for a business person, right? You're going on a business trip.
Sure.
Bring your spouse. We'll give them 50% off.
That sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. You know, they figure, think of it, not only they may miss a little revenue, but not only will they pick up increased ridership, potentially increased loyalty, but some testimonials that they can use about the things that the spouse did when on this business trip.
Right.
Right? So they did it, and it was a big success. And so then the airline got very aggressive in following up with these spouses and saying, hey, really glad you took part in our promotion, and we'd really like to know, what did you think of the business trip?
Sure.
And right. The response was overwhelmingly consistent and loud, and that was, what trip?
Wow! Wow! Oh, well, that is that's a tough one to answer. That's what trip is that? And
you mean you didn't know? You weren't there.
Exactly. Well, that's a. I hope that works out well for him.
Yeah.
I don't know who would be more awkward, the person on the who would be more, you know. Who would be blushing more, the wife or the person?
You know, I changed it. That it was businessman and wife. I tried to update that joke and say the spouse. So you're showing some age there in your young years about just being stereotypical. But anyway, yeah. I digress.
Yeah, right. Well, that's very true.
So National Aviation Day,
right?
And then, gosh, we had some pretty amazing things probably happened this week. I unfortunately was out of town, although for very good reason, so I missed the Chicago Air and Water Show. Were you able to go over and see that?
You know what? I did not make it to the beach itself, but it was kind of neat. I had a great opportunity to go with one of our fellow club members. He's the writer of myflightblog.com, and we flew from here from the Palwaukee Airport, and we say Palwaukee, but we should really say Chicago Executive Airport.
Why? 99% of the aviation community across the continental United States calls it Palwaukee.
Exactly, and I do too.
I do too.
Absolutely.
And when I try to file the Chicago Executive, they always say, okay, you're cleared to Palwaukee.
Right.
Okay. Well, I fight it, right? Why fight it?
Yeah, why fight it? You know, I think it's a... this is one of the cool airport names that have just stuck around.
Well, PWK. I mean, if it's going to be Chicago Executive, it should be CGX, and CGX was Meg's, and that's no more.
Right.
So let's stick with PWK.
Yeah, PWK. You know what? We go out to Philadelphia a lot in the Kinger that I fly around, and the same thing. They say, Chicago Executive Airport, what's that? It's Papa Whiskey Kilo. And then they say, oh, okay, you're cleared to the Palwaukee Airport, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Same down in Texas. It's all over the place except here. Maybe we're the weird ones. I don't know.
Anyway, you were talking about my flight blog and heading over to where?
Yeah, myflightblog.com, and we flew from here, Chicago Executive Airport, and then went all the way out to Chicago-Gary International Airport, which is in Gary, Indiana. By the way, that was my first time flying in there, which was...
No way.
Way.
Oh, my goodness. You got all these thousands of hours, and you haven't been right around the corner.
No, I haven't. So that was kind of neat. There's a lot of neat smells on final approach.
And that was just inside the cockpit. Yeah. But anyway.
True. I guess I should have had the burrito. But anyway, so we land, and it was really neat because that's where all the staging is done for all the fighter jets and aerobatics teams and everything. So... myflightblog.com. He is a he covers the Air and Water Show pretty extensively on his flight blog, and it's he always is going over there and checking it out and writing people up. So he's actually gotten to become pretty good friends with a lot of people over there, and so we flew over there. We got to go up and close and personal with some F-18 Hornets, Super
wow.
Hornets, T-38 Talons. Here's one that everybody was really excited about, which was the F-4 Phantom.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Apparently there's only 90 of them left, and
no way.
They're just crushing them and turning them to tin cans. They're just getting rid of them. So one of the – it was – this is – there was kind of a lot of buzz about this particular airplane being there because the pilot that flies these. So now they use these as mock MiGs during dogfights and whatnot for training events.
Uh-huh.
And there's only a few pilots that can fly these airplanes, and I guess the last round of them are starting to get ready to retire. So,
if I'm not mistaken, and again, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. I used to see the Blue Angels. They flew F-4s.
Right.
And I loved them because they were so loud and powerful. And I always liked T-38s too, but T-38s just sounded so quiet. And that was, I think, what the Thunderbirds were flying back in the day.
Right.
And the Blue Angels had the F-4s. And I just thought, even though I was kind of a Thunderbird fan, I just loved the sound of those F-4s.
Oh, absolutely. They're loud. They're dirty. You can see the soot coming out. You know, talk about doing some dogfighting with those. That would have been fun.
Oh, but, my goodness.
Fun. Fun to do that. Maybe not necessarily a dogfight, but dogfight for fun.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, right.
DFFFF.
But so anyway, it was kind of fun going over there, and one of the pilots that flew the F-18 in, one of the F-18s, and this one was just for a static display at the airport for some media and VIPs to take a look at. But myflightblog.com, he was pretty good friends with the family and the pilot of this airplane, of the F-18. So it was kind of neat being able to hear some stories of flying on aircraft carriers and at night and flying, completely dark and all that. It sounded pretty intense. It's tough to live up to.
And I hear about this, and Todd, who runs myflightblog.com, has had some wonderful experiences, and just hearing about the relationships. I mean, aviation, which is not his Monday through Friday job,
right?
Look what it's doing for him and the fun that he has, and
it's awesome.
It is awesome. It's really cool. I was hoping to make it either to Gary or even to the beach to see the show, but I was having my own little aviation adventure.
Yeah. So what was that?
Well, I'm within the last few months a brand new grandfather.
All right.
And my son and daughter-in-law live in the Iowa City area, which is where I got my pilot ticket in 1976.
No kidding. You're dating yourself now.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least somebody will. But anyway, so I flew out there in a little Cherokee Dakota.
All right.
I just had a great trip. And obviously, I love being there for the weekend, but the trip out was fun because the Dakota was a new airplane to me. And then coming back today, I don't know, it was just something special. You know, there was a lot of pop-up storms here in the Midwest.
Right.
But isolated, so I could see them. And my wife, who's not the most comfortable flyer, didn't want to go through the clouds. So we were asking for diversions, and we were kind of weaving our way through just some beautiful weather as long as we weren't in it.
Right.
And we saw some of the most fantastic rainbows.
Really?
From 5,000 feet. And even my wife was like, oh, look, there's another one. And there's one, we can see it go from one cloud to the next. It was the full one, right?
Right.
I got some pictures of it, but they don't do justice.
Right,
but
yeah,
it was just so cool. And I kept on thinking to myself, this is stuff that the vast majority of the human race never, ever gets to see.
Exactly.
Right? And yet we see it, not every day, but we see special things every day we fly.
Right, absolutely. Well, that's a really, really cool, experience and story. That's a total euphoria for you, being able to, one, do more, most importantly, your family, and you're going to see granddaughter, and sharing this with your wife and being able to fly there and have maximize your time this weekend with them, because an airplane got you there a lot faster than driving or anything else would.
Oh yeah.
And
and we divide the, basically depending on the aircraft, we divide the driving time by four. So
nice.
It's almost 4 hours to drive to Iowa City, 3.5-4 hours, and an hour in the airplane.
Right.
My other son's in Kansas City. It's 8.5 hours, can be there in a little over 2 hours.
Nice.
Yeah, so that it brings family closer. And, you and I have talked about, it's not just about the goal, the destination, that we should enjoy the journey.
Right.
And with aviation. I get to do that, right?
Absolutely.
I get to enjoy the trip out there, as opposed to the car where I keep spending all those hours saying, we could have flown.
Yeah.
We could have flown.
And you did it this weekend.
And I did it this weekend.
Well, congratulations. That's a good start. That's got to be a pretty good feeling.
Oh, my goodness. And then, you know what? We got to get back, and we get in the plane, and we see these beautiful sights, and then drop her off at home and get back to the airport here. How much better to be on the radio with you?
Yeah. Well, hey. I'm glad. Well, I'm flattered.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. So that's cool that aviation is, you know, allows us to do stuff like that. You know, have the maximize our time, see that, come here, do the show. I mean, you've had a fun weekend.
Oh, at the absolute best. Oh. And that, you know, how many times do people look forward to Sunday nights? I do.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's you know what, as a kid I used to hate about this time, well, not this time, but maybe like September, mid-September, Sunday afternoons around 4 o'clock when I was in school. I hate that was my the worst time of the week, because you knew you had all this homework looming. But now, you know, preparing for a radio show, it's kind of, it's a lot of fun. It's something that's just to really look forward to.
Yeah. I hate to tell you, depending on the job, sometimes you get to Friday night or Saturday morning, you go, oh my goodness, Monday's only 2 days away.
Right.
And that's, but I know I don't do that anymore.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we have I think we've got a pretty good a good topic for us to talk about tonight, and we'd like for everybody to tune in, and we'd love to hear from you. So what's tonight's topic about? We're going to be talking about aviation and youth, aren't we?
We are, because we talked, a couple weeks ago about what's wrong with aviation? Nothing,
right,
was the conclusion. But in that show, we talked a lot about how do we convert inactive pilots to active pilots, and then how do we convert pilots that aren't pilots yet, what I called latent pain, if you will,
sure,
to active. And this one is more about the latter than the former, and specifically on the youth, because the industry is getting older. We're seeing a lot of the pilots, whether it's with the airline carriers or with the charter companies, that, you know, aren't the youth of today.
Right.
And with retirements coming at age 65, with the state of the industry, we need to see an influx of new, younger pilots. So we want to spend a couple hours talking about that, not only between you and I, or for any of our listeners that want to tweet us or Skype in. Matter of fact, maybe you can tell them how to do that.
Sure. So we have this problem, and we'd love to hear from you and kind of address this. So not only one person can solve this, but, you know, we can all solve it together. So we'd love to hear from you anytime during the show. Feel free to call in. That number to call in and talk to us directly live on the air is area code 312-436-0356. If you're afraid of calling in and being on the show, feel free to tweet us. Make sure that you include the hashtag SimpleFlight, one word. You can look us up on Facebook, and also there's a live chat feature on athanolive.com, the radio station that we're broadcasting from, and we are on that. So lots of ways to get a hold of us.
What about Skype?
That's the phone number that they call in. So 312-436-0356 to call us in live. And to be honest with you, Mark exposed a little trade secret that comes through your Skype line, which is kind of cool. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, sorry about that, but I don't know the difference. I figured there's a cell phone, there's a Skype phone, there's whatever. Right.
Well, no, that's all right, but it's all pretty much the same thing. So that comes through Skype, and we could patch in. Everybody can hear. That's how you get live on the air with us. But, so make sure tweet, call, email, text. The only form that we don't accept is message pigeon, because we're indoors.
Although, I tell you what, I am looking out. This is going to be our new home. We're broadcasting from the airport, and we've got a big glass conference room, and I'm looking at the lights of an airport, and it's just awesome. This is absolutely the perfect place to host the show from.
It is. We got a great view of the ramp. We'll see, what do we have on the ramp right now? We have a Cessna 310.
Which people are getting into as we speak.
Absolutely. I see a 172 off in the dark distance there, maybe a Falcon. What's that one with the canard? Can you see that one with the canard?
Well, that's got to be a Piaggio.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, good. So
what is this, a little test for me?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know the answer to that.
We get to a quick audit. Quick all audit. Right. Aviation knowledge. So, but anyway, so we the whole idea is we have, you know what was neat while we were setting up for the show, a lady came in here that's part of the airport, and all of a sudden she just started talking about this. So it's, I think there's a real nice sense of awareness that it's really important to start getting youth involved in aviation.
Yeah, and at appropriate time we can go into a little bit more in depth, but just at a high level, she mentioned that she was with CABA, which is the Chicago area. Oh my goodness, let me
Business
I'm gonna mess it
Aviation
up.
Association.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
CABAA, Chicago Area Business Aviation Association, and they give away thousands and thousands of dollars of scholarships. And I was unaware of that. And they just had a golf outing and raised, what'd you say, $50,000?
Yeah, over $50,000 just on that golf outing to send pilots that are maybe on the collegiate level who have their license already to flight safety, do advanced things.
Citation type ratings.
SIMCOM.
ANPs for troubleshooting, mechanics. I mean, all that stuff. And I didn't realize that, and that is so cool because that'll speak directly to some of the things that we talk about tonight, not only in terms of the problems, but some of the solutions.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so that's kind of neat. So I was really pleasantly surprised to hear that, you know, that. And to be honest with you, when I was at Oshkosh about a month ago, there's these little dabblings of you know, it was people were kind of knew that youth need to be, you know, is going to be a big part of aviation. This year they were talking about being aviation, you know, going to the Oshkosh Air Show as being on your bucket list. I think next year it should be all about aviation youth and attracting new pilots. Maybe not necessarily youth, but, you know, new pilots in general with an emphasis on the youth. But I think there's some ways that we can do that, and we just have to get really creative with them.
Yeah, and you know, maybe a good place to start is to talk about some of the... you and I now hate to use the word problems or challenges, but you know that I think that's what they are, the challenges. And as I look for what's different, right? Because when I was a young man, you know, the Wright brothers hadn't yet flown, but they were due to. Now that's supposed to be a little humor. Thank you, Al. All right, so yeah, boom, boom, boom. But for whatever reason, and we can talk a little bit about it, you know, I would go to the airport, and I was living in Chicago, and we'd go to O'Hare, and there were no jets, there's the prop planes.
You're dating yourself again.
The turbine, and American Airlines Electra, that was my first one. It, you know, had that turbine startup sound with four engines.
Right.
And, you know, you would see a pilot walk by.
Right.
And it was mom and dad, there's the pilot. That is the coolest guy in the world.
Right.
And it was mostly men in those days. But the flight attendants, men or women, they were dressed to a T. They just had an air of professionalism about them and almost, you know, out there in terms of unattainable.
Right, exactly.
Right? The pride they had and just that very special job. And I think many of us aspired to that.
Absolutely.
And now I don't see that, right? We go through O'Hare, and especially, I don't want to disparage anyone, but sometimes I'm hoping their shirt is tucked in.
Absolutely. Right? No, that's a big problem. So there's a sense of pride, and I think that there's, on so many different levels from, you know, the airlines as companies, the airport experience, you know, us as the passengers, us as the crew member, just everybody owns a piece of this. And you know, it was when you look at that back then, when you saw the pilot and you see that, oh man, there is the pilot, there's the, you know, it's almost unobtainable. You know, that's what I would call airmanship. Right, there's a level of showmanship and airmanship and swag, and you know that really shines through.
Interesting.
When you walk through and back then, and you know, there was an old about a year ago, there was a a TV show, and it got canceled, Pan Am. I don't know if you ever
saw
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, I did.
Absolutely. So I think that show captured kind of what, I guess the right word is, a lifestyle. Not necessarily, and it was an aviation lifestyle. So it wasn't just the pilots. It wasn't just the flight attendants. It was, you know, there's a lifestyle with the airline, the airport authority, you know, the passengers, everybody dressed up and things like that. So there's a, you know, that just doesn't exist anymore.
And why not? I mean, you think about, first of all, it doesn't exist anywhere. You go downtown,
right.
People used to dress up just going downtown. So it's not just an aviation
right.
thing. But also, when you think about how the airlines, and again, I have to be careful pointing fingers elsewhere, but how they pay and treat their employees.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's food stamp money.
Absolutely.
So why would someone say, you know what, I think I'm going to go get $100,000 in debt, get all my ratings, so I can make $20,000 a year?
It's a tough... yeah, exactly. So it's almost... It's beaten all the pride out of it. Or the incentive, and it's not just a monetary, that's part of it. But it's a very high level skill that, you know, very few people can do. The responsibility is tremendous.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But it's just taken down to you know, almost a welfare level.
Right, and you know, certainly there are many pilots that share our passion, and they
right.
say, you know, full steam ahead. We know some of them, and you used to fly for the regionals,
right?
Because there is a passion for flight,
and exactly.
And if they hold on to it, who cares, right? You know, that I still see a lot of pilots that love their job,
right?
They may not like all the things, the back end, but you put them in a cockpit, you put them on an approach or something, and you know that comes through, and so. They look forward to Monday, if you will, the Monday through Friday, or their trip, whenever it is.
Absolutely.
So it's not all about the pay, but in terms of getting interest from today's youth, that may play into it. I don't know. Maybe it's not even making the list because kids don't know that there's a need.
Right, absolutely. Right. So when I was going to college, it was pretty interesting. You know, they were talking about this looming you know, pilot shortage because of mandatory retirements, which at some point I think is going to catch up. And, you know, it's been a little bit delayed because of a couple different regulations and legislation movements and acts and all that. But I still think that there is going to be a huge need. But so this lifestyle, I hate to use the word old fashioned, but, you know, back in the 60s, that's kind of the old fashioned lifestyle it was. And then it was hip and modern, and, you know, you dress up and you go flying and everything. But that high, you know, elegant experience was carried throughout. Now, I don't think that it can really exist in that type of, you know, that type of level anymore. But that sense of pride and lifestyle can exist. It just has to be a different lifestyle. We're not wearing three-piece suits when we travel. You know, we have to get creative and try to figure out what it will bring back, what, you know, that new lifestyle is. It might be flip-flops and, you know, T-shirts, but still, that's a lifestyle. And if everybody kind of, you know, takes pride and ownership of that, then that's how we get it back. So there's different ways, I think, that you know, if we get creative, you know, that we can really tap into that lifestyle. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. But again, we've got to put ourselves in the heads of today's youth. And it's
right.
not even making the list. You know, I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I had taken 25 years off flying. And when raising the family, flying wasn't really part of the discussion. And I didn't take them up. So it was. They were older when I started flying with them, and I asked my youngest, who was actually, he was in high, oh, maybe not, maybe he's in junior high. I don't remember. Isn't that horrible? But I took him flying when I first got back into flying in the early 2004.
Right.
And, you know, I'm one of those that said, okay, I'm going to do this, and now I'm adding flaps, and now I'm dialing this in.
Right.
I think it scared the crap out of him.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely.
And I said, wouldn't you like to do this? And his response was, Nah, too much going on. Too much going on in the cockpit.
Right.
Very smart, studious student. But just, I think there's a fear there. You know, only he can answer that. But again, just not the interest to push all those buttons and turn all those dials for what his return is. And so it says to me that today's youth has evolved. And maybe they're into more entrepreneurship. All these businesses start up. You don't go work for somebody else. You use your computer and you develop some code or an internet business, and they go work for themselves. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't seem like aviation's making the list.
Right. So back, you know, when I was in, you know, kindergarten, on your graduation day, you would get up and you'd say, they would ask, what do you want to be? You know, and the few things that they'd ask, you know, that your choice, you didn't have a choice, or, you know, you weren't limited to these choices, but these were the typical choices. And those were, I want to be a policeman or a firefighter or a doctor or a pilot. Everybody wanted to be a pilot or a firefighter, you know. And I wonder what today, you know, at today's graduations are, you know, what is it now computer programmer, you know, advocate for something else, who knows what they are, you know. But I think that us as that exists in the aviation community have to start getting creative now and reaching out to the youth to continue and make aviation better, because they're going to have a skill set that we don't have that's going to impact aviation and probably for the better.
Yeah, and I, you know, you talk about reaching out, and I think it was you that said one generation inspires the next.
Right.
And I think that's very true, because if part of the issue is this lack of awareness of the need, of the fun, of what it's all about, who better to tell this generation than the people that, like you and me, that are enjoying it today, whether it's you making a living at it or me just having fun and go and visit a grandchild.
Right.
So, you know, I wrote a blog this last week, as you put on the simpleflight.net website. Thank
you
very
that.
Much. Which talked about the fences. And I think that's part of that fence that we see, whether it's because of September 11th or whatever, that exists around an airport.
Right.
While it doesn't emotionally separate us from those that love aviation, it physically separates us from making that connection.
Right.
We're all having dog day afternoons, hot dog things, you know, inside the fence and meeting as a group, and we don't choose to bring in those outside the fence.
Right.
And that there's an easy target audience. You know, you just go drive around, you see these people on the outside of the fence parking their cars with their kids, and they just, you could see, just sitting there looking at the airport and amazed by it and wish they could get involved.
Right, exactly. And I think that's hard. That's a hard thing to do. So your blog article is pretty inspirational. We got a couple comments on it. And,
oh, did we?
Yeah, there were. And just how it's actually inspired a few people to try to reach out and to people in aviation. If they see somebody just kind of gawking over an airplane, invite them, you know, talk to them. Say, hey, I'm a pilot, or, you know, just start that exposure, you know. So there's an effort that we need that for the people that exist within aviation right now to, you know, we have to put forth the effort to reach out. But, you know, it's also becoming very, very, you know, a lot harder to do things like that. So you said this September 11th, and I, you know, that's kind of a nasty, you know, bad word for airports and aviation,
right?
Yeah, just and what it's done. I remember being a kid, and, you know, thank you, Mom, for letting us do this on Mother's Day, but we would always go to O'Hare along Irving Park Road, and it was off of 4 right, I believe, that you could watch tons and tons and tons of airplanes. There are many cars pulled over, you know, families out there, you know, sitting on the roof watching airplanes land and take off. 727s, DC-10, whatever you want, it was there. And now you can't do that. You know, you can't pull over. You're going to get ticketed, towed, and arrested for, you know, possible terrorism. And it's kind of a, so all these little gaps in these fences that were cool little gems to see something really neat that you don't get to see everything. These things are closing up. So, and all these fences are coming up. And the funny part is that the grass on either side of the fence, it's the same piece of grass. You know, but here's this wall and this boundary, and it's like the Berlin Wall, you know, goes up around these things, and it's so secretive, and it creates this tension, right? And it doesn't leave a good taste in your mouth.
Right. Well, and it's not the problem, but it's one of those things that separates those that would like to know more about aviation and those that you know can get there. And I mentioned in the blog what I did last week,
right,
or whenever that was, you know, meet the people. It was a father and three children, and took them inside the fence, right? Hey, follow my car.
Yeah,
I'll punch in the code, drive in. And I gotta tell you, it was just such a cool feeling to walk inside this big community hangar where we have everything from four seat GA piston airplanes to Lear jets and twin engine 310s and all that, and they see all these airplanes, and it was cool. Wow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, an airplane, daddy. You know, and then we sat in an airplane, and although these kids were a little bit different, I want to sit in back. And I said, what do you mean you want to sit in back?
Right.
No pilot wants to sit in back, but they had fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I felt at the end of what took all of 30 minutes, including me eating lunch, maybe a little bit longer, I introduced four people to aviation, and three of them were young kids that left saying, I want to be a pilot. And who knows if it'll stick, right?
Yeah,
right. It just happened to be a fun thing to do on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon. I forget which day it was. But it's going to be those kinds of things that, again, are part of a much bigger solution.
Right.
But we can't forget about the little one-offs that may have impact.
Right, absolutely. So to listeners out there, if there are issues or those gaps in the fence that are closing that you can see that we haven't addressed yet, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to call us 312-436-0356, and you'll call us live on the air, and we can address those problems. If you're afraid of calling us, please either email, text us, go to simpleflight.net, and you can reach out to us there. It has our Twitter accounts and Facebook and email and all that. So feel free to do that, or you can go to www.athanolive.com. And
how do you spell Athano?
It is www.ethanolive.com. And there's a little live chat feature on the left-hand side, and we're on.
And it's
right
Ethanolive, but I think it looks like Ethan Olive. So whichever way helps you remember,
right? So, but anyway, getting back to this, there's I like to be creative, and you know my big thing is what are some creative outlets that we can do to share this aviation. So meaning, now that we can't sit and watch airplanes land at airports anymore, there's a few airports that still have viewing areas, but not necessarily the most inviting areas.
Right.
But what's the new form of watching airplanes land at an airport when we can't see them at an airport anymore?
I guess it could be something on the internet.
Right, exactly. So that's one way, you know, something on the internet. And, you know, this week, from our last show from last week, we had the folks from sparkreel.com on, and it was really neat. We were going and talking we posted a lot of neat videos and saw some really cool things from cool videos posted by new members watching airplanes land, going to the air show, and things like that. So so that's one way. You can let people see aviation from the internet. You know, maybe we can. That's one way of transmitting, you know, the message. You know, through new technologies like SparkReel, for example. That's just one example.
Yeah, and actually, something with school starting, I am reaching out to some local high schools. Just say, hey, science or physics or whatever, can I come in and talk to your students, introduce the aviation? And I'm waiting until they get to school, which is starting, I think, this next week.
Yeah.
And, I think I have the relationships and they'll see enough value that I'll do it. So I'm planning on taking some of the videos that we see on a Spark Reel or YouTube or whatever and sharing those with the story about the need, about the resources, about the things that can come to being with aviation and maybe educate some people.
See, that's pretty cool. I like that. It seems like not a lot of people do that, and you know, three cheers for you for doing that.
Hip hip hooray.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Absolutely. But what would be kind of neat, so there's I'm a big advocate for technology. You know, it makes things fun, new, it sparks a lot of creativity and things like that. So it would be neat is if when you were talking to people, these kids, and they're in a computer lab, they could sign on to like Twitter or something like that. You can interact with them, send them videos via Twitter, you know, while you're talking. These are just ideas. They're not necessarily what you should do, but I think that you know, if here we are transmitting information to the youth that and promoting the message of aviation, we're there face to face with them, but they're also connected in this online world, or what they call the Twitter sphere. Right, so their own social media or technology world. If we can communicate to them through those channels too, just come at it from all angles.
Yeah, actually, maybe a slight digression, but the other thing that I used to do as a kid, but even now, I still play Flight Simulator.
Yeah, right.
Do kids play? Do they even sell? I know they sell it. I saw there's a new version, although I saw some bad reviews on it from the flying community. I'm not sure exactly what was said, but bottom line, Flight Sims, I don't care if it was a shoot 'em up game. I never did the shoot 'em up part.
Right.
I just practiced the landing.
Right,
and all that. Do kids still do that? And is it because they're just not interested?
You know, I that's a good question, and I would love to say that yes, they still do that, but I'm probably having false hopes. I was a guy. I'm very fortunate where my dad, he was able to every time a new version of Flight Simulator came out, all the way back from the 80s, you know, when it first came out, and it was at Migs Field. It was just, you know, the Sears Tower was just a black rectangle in the sky, too.
Green,
I'm sorry, yeah. McCormick Place was the black rectangle. But it was always installed and ready to, you know, play on the computer. And I thought that was a huge, absolutely huge, part of my aviation exposure as a kid, to get me excited about aviation. And I, just like you, I was all about the landing, and you know, you'd have fun with it every once in a while, but when I was getting my license, I would refly all of my flights that I did on Flight Simulator to practice. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was a great training tool. And I would love to hear that it still is a very prominent computer game within aviation and youth, but I highly doubt that it is.
So as I watch, again, the 20-somethings, there's a lot of Madden being played, you know, obviously
right.
In the game consoles rather than on the internet. And then I remember in the college years, it was a lot of things like Halo and shoot 'em up games. But I didn't see Flight Simulator being played.
Right.
You know, that was always the gift they bought for Dad.
Yeah.
on Xbox or something that had some kind of aviation theme to it, but it wasn't something the kids were interested in. So I suspect, and I might be wrong, but I suspect that these kinds of things aren't selling very well.
Probably not, just based on the shelf space of it. You know, it's one, and it's probably $19 now.
Yeah, I'm here. Microsoft Flight Simulator. I'm out on the internet here. It shows, I think it's still Microsoft Flight Simulator. It doesn't say X, but I believe it is still there. But anyway, so I'm sure it's not like their top seller.
No, I'm sure it is not. But yeah, that's one way of reconnecting. You know, you just brought up a great idea. I'm going to promote that. Maybe I'll even hand out copies when you get a new student. You know, and that's, hey, here's your, you had your first flying lesson. Congratulations. You know, here's a copy of Flight Simulator. And it would be pretty, you know, say, hey, we're going to use this as a tool. We have it set up in our flying club, and nobody uses it.
I noticed
that you use it. I'll come in, you know, when nobody's there after a long flight or I'm waiting for a student to come in, and I'll play on it, you know, but I play on it for 10 minutes. I want to do a whole, like, you know, O'Hare to Heathrow flight in a 747 on it. but yeah, there was one concept that my... And this would have been pretty cool, and maybe we could still do this. But my dad was thinking, you know, back when Flight Simulator was coming out, and you know, it was pretty popular back in the early 90s, of hooking up all these different computers on these networks. And imagine a computer network back in the early 90s, and having the Blue Angels, a bunch of different users of Flight Simulator, and being the Blue Angels of River Forest, which was the name of the town that I grew up in. But, you know, if we're all sitting there on a computer in the same room doing formation flights and being our own Blue Angels on flight, that would have been pretty cool, you know. So creativity, things like that, that really, you know, we need to think outside the box and present today, you know, the aviation in a medium that kids will understand today.
Well, and you talked about, you know, take a lesson and get a free flight simulator. I think there's some good things that are there. Again, I don't know how much it's known, but if you're less with 17 or less and do the Young Eagles flight, you get free ground school, which is a few hundred bucks from Sporties. It's just, I don't know if it's a King course, I think. Or no, obviously it would be the Sporty course. And I think that's just wonderful. I mean, that's a good way to get them in the books and start studying, although maybe that's not what they want to do. They like to have a little bit more immediate satisfaction. And, you know, there's got to be a ways to say, take your first free flight.
Right.
And then here's what you do with it after.
Right, exactly. There's a, you know, there was a website, beapilot.com. And I think you had mentioned this the other night. But it was a way to print out a certificate, and no, it was actually my flight blog. Todd, yeah, he mentioned yeah. this as a, you know, this was a huge thing. You know, that was a big website when I was getting my license back in 2002. I was on tobeapilot.com nonstop, and they had certificates that you can print out and present to a flight school, and it would be a certificate for a $50 intro flight. And the idea, I don't know if tobeapilot.com is really the flagship that it once was, but you know, this idea behind discovery flights, there's a misconception on a training level, and here's somebody, their very first flight, you know, this, if you go to a flight school or an FBO and you sign up for a discovery flight. And this is when this is your one chance to be sold on aviation. And, you know, now on the training level, so the instructor level, the instructor just sits there and he or she sees these things as annoyances. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not good flight time builders. They don't pay very well, you know, because they're generally pretty short flights. And then, you know, there's no oomph put into it. And so the kid, the passenger who signed up for this thing lands is like, oh, that was it, okay. You know, if we look at it from a sales aspect, these discovery flights shouldn't be perceived as an annoyance from a flight training point. It should be this is a sales lead for a new student to get you hours, get them. It's your job. You're the person that they're looking up to have them build excitement in them to get their license and fly.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If all of us have that passion that I think we do,
right,
to leave that on the ground on a first flight is just a total waste of talent, of passion. I mean, why would you leave it behind when it's the thing that we need most? And again, in the end, this instructor now gets more another student.
Right. Exactly.
Right. To build the hours, to make the dollars, and to fly. And I'm not a CFI, so I can't put myself in their shoes, but I have seen it where it just seems like the energy isn't there to really be the catalyst for launching this new pilot's
right, exactly.
Spark.
Right, absolutely. It's almost kind of like a there needs to be like a training to CFI, you know, to be a pilot.com. This would be good for them to go out and just train flight schools on what these discovery flights really should be. And you know, if we have flight schools going out of business all the time, people, you know, it's worn out, everybody's excited to get out. My alma mater, University of Illinois, the Institute of Aviation, that's being shut down here in the next year or two. And so we have all these wonderful flight schools being shut down, and you know, maybe it's the own flight school's fault, you know, because they're not taking these discovery flights seriously.
I don't know. I could defer to you on that. Certainly the youth at these schools, you would think that they'd have the highest level of energy.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But maybe not.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. But I think that there's a couple, there's another lifestyle issue. So aviation from a pilot certificate holder's stance is a, you know, there's an issue there. But, you know, all of us are affected, you know, we're users of aviation. Whether you flew to California for a vacation or you're a pilot or you're a flight, you know, we're all affected by aviation. Or even if you bought something on Amazon.com, your package probably arrived via aviation resource, or it was at least touched by that. But so there's this lifestyle issue, and I posted a blog this week on simpleflight.net, and it was called "Now Proudly Serving Starbucks." And I think, for those of you who don't know, I spent a lot of my time at Starbucks writing the blog and maintaining the website, doing aviation things. And I sit there, and I all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't a big Starbucks fan when I first started going. I just went there because it was kind of a neat place to go. But then I realized that's why I love going. Because Starbucks is a lifestyle. They've nailed it. You know, everything's dialed in for the social media experience. We have, they have outlets all over the place. You know, so you can sit down at any table, plug in your computer, and work. You know, go to an airport now. Let's say a terminal at the O'Hare Airport. Look at the great lengths people go to plug in their computer or their phone for, 5 minutes, just get that extra boost of charge before they hop on the flight.
Right.
And, you know, there's people sitting under garbage cans.
I know, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You know, there's people sitting under garbage cans trying to get, you know, these electrons back into their phone. But, so it's kind of a weird, nobody wants to do that, right? Nobody wants to sit under a garbage can. So this lifestyle is way out of whack. So the whole premise of this blog was that Starbucks, you know, their product is a lifestyle. You know, they serve coffee, and that's kind of the bonding agent behind it. And it's, you know, and some days it's good coffee, some days it's not. But, you know, here's a great example. We were going to meet earlier this week, and we were trying to figure out where to meet, and you offered a Starbucks, and you don't even drink coffee.
I know.
Right?
I'm intimidated. I had to be trained on what I can order there. I don't like coffee, and with this grande, mocha, kappa, poo-poo, whatever, I did a bottle of water.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you could go... Yeah, so it is kind of intimidating from an, you know, coffee snob standpoint, but... Yeah. But still, you know, you offered it up to so that we could meet there. You know, it's a meeting place.
I agree, exactly. That's the first thing that came to mind. Let's go to Starbucks. They have Wi-Fi. We can talk.
Right.
And it was nothing about the coffee. It was
right.
Just the image that it carried with it.
Right, exactly. So the funny part is, and so getting back to the blog, is that these airlines, there's a couple airlines that serve Starbucks coffee. And how many people, when's the last time that you booked an airplane ticket on an airline because they were serving Starbucks coffee?
Never.
Yeah, right. No, never. But we were, the other day, we were going to pick our meeting spot at a Starbucks and not even get coffee. So there's this weird discontinuity, right, of, you know, what this actually is. So here's these airlines trying to leverage the Starbucks product, which isn't coffee, it's a lifestyle, but they're serving it. And, you know, they're doing it, the airlines are doing it wrong. You know, there's this whole, you know, you're never going to book an airplane ticket based on what coffee the airline serves. So the idea is like, okay, well, let's look at what Starbucks is. That's, their product is a lifestyle. We get back to this lifestyle issue of airline travel. You know, there's so many different ways that you can, that could, you know, be changed on or go through a mini renaissance, so that when an airline does serve Starbucks, then, you know, it captures that image, so that there's a lifestyle association that goes along mm-hmm. with it, rather than just you know, airline Starbucks coffee is probably pretty gross.
Yeah, right.
Coming from potable water and, you know, nasty
like
coffee pots.
The Tapion water they serve.
Right, exactly.
I always used to ask for Evian. You mean Tapion? They finally confessed. They just put it in Evian bottles.
Yeah, right.
was that was all that was Evian about it.
Yeah.
Of course, Evian spelled backward is naive, so I always wondered about that too, but that's
a whole
other conversation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of a weird... The weird that check out the blog article in mine
I will.
Mark's on simpleflight.net.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they can check out my
read
mine.
I read yours, and it's pretty neat. So there's a but so what's, you know, when you go to Starbucks, you're proud of the lifestyle, you know. So the idea is, when you ride on an airline, when's the last time you've been proud about something your airline did? It's probably not.
Yeah, I'm thinking back into the 90s. I was flying British Airways, and they were surprised that I paid full fare for her business class from London to Chicago. And so they moved me up to first class.
Right.
And they put me in the cockpit flying over Newfoundland to see the glaciers or the icebergs. And it was a world. Oh, my goodness. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
But they treated me like I was someone special. You know, I thought, hey, I'll always remember this.
Right, exactly.
And again, the world's changed around us. I don't want to hold all organizations like they don't want to. You know, with the fuel prices, they're having to cut back.
They do.
But there's a value prop out there that's not being met. And there's like you say, the image is gone.
Exactly.
Right or wrong. And maybe because people aren't interested in the image. You know, we're seeing the popular cars with the younger set isn't Porsche and BMW and all that. It's the good gas mileage. Matter of fact, I just read the new Acura IWX, I think it is. It's
right.
Basically a Civic, but they said it really speaks to today's current generation of younger folks, which I guess would include folks like yourself, that don't want to be over the top. They have different needs and different expectations. And, and maybe that's also to say that our messaging in this industry is still, like we said a couple weeks ago, old ways of doing, attacking new problems, and it's not going to work.
Right, exactly. So we've got to look into that, find that creativity. If you have any suggestions or possible solutions or things where you want to have us hash out, feel free to call us 312-436-0356, and that will patch you through live on the radio with us. We can talk it over. If you're a little gun-shy about talking to us on the air live, you can go to athanolive.com, and on the left-hand side, there is a live chat feature. Feel free to tweet us and Facebook us as well, and you can access all that information off of simpleflight.net. But, so there's the old way of addressing new problems. I like that. So here's something that's that I like to talk about, and this is part of the old way of addressing problems in an old way. So we have, think about how connected. How many portable devices do you carry when you travel now?
I carry two. I carry my iPad and I carry my smartphone.
Your smartphone. So I have a laptop. I have a two tablets. I've got a smartphone, and then now a radio mixer. So there's
the only thing you need to add to that is you need to get a life.
Yes, true.
Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Wah,
so,
wah,
right. style points. But so this need to be to plug in is huge. And you go through these airline terminals, and I guess you look around and you watch these people, the great lengths that they go, and they go to plug their phone and their electronics in is ridiculous. And I think that the one thing that should be considered, maybe a simple thing, is adding more outlets at airports. That would make a lot of people's lives easier. There's a sort of, and as simple or as rudimentary or shallow as that sounds, maybe that would improve the, you need these massive charging stations, at airports, because you look at people miss their flights just to charge their iPhone for the flight. And then they end up missing it because they're halfway down the terminal, charging their phone.
Yeah, and I think, it goes beyond just that.
Right.
When I go in there, I would love to use, the clubs, the Admiral's Club, I forget what United's is called, but, the different club rooms, because they have the internet, they have the place where you can watch TV, read a paper, grab a drink. And I had gotten in the mail a free stay at an Admiral's Club, right? So I thought, okay, that's pretty cool. It had just expired.
Right.
So, I had no major expectations, but I went in and showed them the coupon I received in the mail, and the guy said, no, you can't come in.
Yeah.
And I walked away, not upset, but thinking to myself, I think these guys just missed an opportunity.
Right.
Here I was a business traveler, dress nicely, and I was going to use this facility, which I'm sure wasn't full anyway, and they could have made a good impression with me. And once again, I've been disappointed in the airlines, whether it's the lines that we have to go through, the crowded sitting center seats, or whatever. And here they had an opportunity. They said, hey, we want to treat you nice and
right.
Put you in the Admiral's Club. Oh, I'm sorry, you missed by a day. It expired yesterday. You can no longer come into our club. You're not worthy. And I just thought that was by the rules, so right. I had no problem with it.
Right.
But they missed an opportunity.
Absolutely. It's just going that extra mile. There's a, making people feel the way that they want to be felt. So there's this whole thing of... I used to be a gate agent. I don't know if you ever knew that.
No. God, yeah. You did everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, back in college, I was a gate agent. So there was one, and this is something that happened. So I was a gate agent for Mesaba Airlines down in Champaign, Illinois. They were flying Saab Fairchild 340s in and out of Champaign. They'd fly like four or five flights a day to Detroit, and... Our station actually prided itself. We created a lifestyle. We kind of grooved and clicked almost the same way as baristas at Starbucks groove and click. That's another thing that I mentioned in the blog article. And I'm so inspired when I go to a Starbucks that I see a lot of myself as acting as a crew member. How these baristas work with each other. So that's really special to see. There's a lot of parallels between barista life and crew member life. But anyway, we created this lifestyle, this employee lifestyle at Mesaba, and we always wanted to, it was one of the worst stations and the worst performing and all that. And we, there's a group of us that really turned this station around. It was kind of the flagship. Our on-time performance is great. Customer complaints were down, and baggage lost luggage, you know, was starting to go out of our station to almost zero. And it was just a lot of fun. And there was one time that we were working, and there was the University of Illinois department, athletic department, booked an entire airplane for the handicapped wheelchair like racing team to go fly for one of their competitions. And here they are, and imagine each person, you know, there's 20 people, and each one of them had two wheelchairs, a racing one and their kind of their everyday one. And in a little Saab Fairchild, which is a little 30-seat turboprop, we ended up having a massive space issue. You know, not all 40 wheelchairs were going to fit on this airplane, and people were going to be disconnected. You know, these people that needed their wheelchairs were going to be separated from them, and that was going to be a huge issue. So the nice thing about the station that we worked at, we solved the problem. We went out, and it was kind of neat. There was a couple of us that won the Employee of the Quarter Award for our airline because we took kind of ownership of this problem. You know, imagine all of a sudden you show up at Detroit and you don't have your wheelchair, so you can't move around. You have to stay on the plane. That plane needs to do more business and fly to this next city. So what we ended up doing is we got as many wheelchairs as we could on that airplane, and then the other worker and I, we drove the remaining wheelchairs to Indianapolis so it could be fit on a DC-9 that was going to Detroit, and then that airplane was going to get there first, I believe, and then we made sure that there was special coordination lined up so that when the Saab actually got up there, all the wheelchairs were in place, ready to go.
That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, we were just kind of, you know, when we first addressed the problem to the trip coordinator, they pretty much blew a gasket. But you know, we quickly figured out a way to solve the problem. But you know, so that, you know, just like your story was kind of a missed opportunity of by the rules and so on and so forth. You know, if we followed the rules, you know, it would have taken days for all these wheelchairs to get up there, but you know, we went outside of them and made it happen. Hopefully, created an opportunity for the airline.
Yeah. So that's a story, right?
And right.
That's got a good end. But now let's start translating that to a flight school. So there's two questions I think we have to do a better job or more focus on over the next hour here of the show.
Right.
How to increase people coming to a flight school is one,
right?
But two, once they're there, this lifestyle or this, you know, a different experience than maybe people are seeing today to keep them there. So maybe put the cart before the horse, but address the latter one first. And that's, what do flight schools, what can they learn from the things you just brought up, whether it's Starbucks or your little gate agent story from Champaign, Illinois.
Right. So the idea is to create a lifestyle. Well, you know, there's a couple different lifestyles. So one, and ultimately this all goes back to taking ownership of the student's goals. You can create that lifestyle for them and give them a taste and tease them a little bit. You know, so there's a little element of sales training that should go on, you know, at these flight schools.
Mm-hmm.
And as simple as or as rudimentary as that may sound, or you know, as harshly as that may be received, but yeah, you need to be a, you know, your job as a CFI, there's a whole course, you know, this whole course of being about being CFI isn't necessarily how to teach the maneuvers, you know, how to fly them from the right seat. That's a big part of it, but there's the whole other ground school portion of becoming a flight instructor is, you know, maintaining professionalism. There's this whole, you know, image that the FAA kind of wants you to present, and taking ownership of these learning principles and being, you know, transmitting them correctly. And I think that's a big, big portion. So maybe even, you know, you can, I think a lot of that can be cleaned up with like a little sales class, maybe for a day for instructors, and, you know, to figure out how to take ownership. So, you know, it's a lot of flight schools train their instructors to teach so that their students can go to the airlines quickly. You know, there's a quick pace. Do these 10-day crash courses to get your rating, and then, boom, you move on to the next step. You know, congratulations, you're almost, you know, 45 more days and you're in an airline pilot. But there's some students that want to fly just for fun, recreational, just like yourself, you know. And I think that's the trickier person to teach to, because I was taught to teach people to become airline pilots. But now there's you want to go see your granddaughter. So if I'm teaching you to be an airline pilot, but you want to be taught to go fly your granddaughter, to go see your granddaughter, that's a big, you know, everybody's goals in that scenario is a little bit different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty big, that's step one. So now if we made lessons and we learned how to fly together, you know, so that you can achieve those goals, now you're creating your lifestyle, you know, the way that you saw yourself in aviation and operating. And I think that's kind of one thing, right?
Right.
And what do you think about that?
I think it makes perfect sense. And again, it shouldn't be that innovative or creative to say, oh, yeah, cool. But
right.
I think it is. As we've talked previously, I don't know that others are doing it. Certainly the schools that I've been in touch with, they have a syllabus. You go through the syllabus and you learn these skills, and when you get your private ticket, then you can worry about doing the thing that you're meeting your goals.
Right, exactly.
So I like that you bring it into it.
Right.
And let's not put it all on the CFIs. You know,
I
have talked about good CFI, bad CFI. There's good student, bad student. There are students out there that say, hey, can you just sign me off? I don't want to go through any proficiency. Can I skip a couple steps here? I've talked to a lot of CFIs whose students say, I want to take the test. I know I'm ready, when they know they aren't ready.
Right.
And so there are students that have the wrong attitude. They just want to get the ticket. They don't want to have the learning, or, again, it's more focused on the destination, not the journey.
Right, exactly. So that's one thing. So the student instructor relationship, that needs to go, not that it doesn't need to go through a renaissance, but you kind of have to go the extra step to understand who you're teaching and, you know, who you're receiving instruction from. So if you're a good student, you understand that, hey, I want to teach to fly to go see my granddaughter, but, you know, he's teaching me to become an airline pilot. You need to fire the instructor, you know. And then maybe from an instructor standpoint, hey, you know, I'm really good with teaching guys that want to go to the airlines. Sounds like you want to do $100 hamburger stuff, and maybe you go and see, you know, instructor X. You know, so there's this open door. You know, you're building loyalty and trust, and you don't even know it. And I think that's a big thing. And even though if you have to go separate ways, I mean, you're still building a lot of trust. You know, you know that everybody's best interests are being looked out for. You know, and that creates efficiency too, I think. But there's also neat ways you can go. A lot of these flights schools, you show up to them, and you call on the phone, and they pencil you in for your schedule and all that. And there's just this big, you know, calendar sitting on the desk with a lot of eraser marks because students cancel, bad weather. And, you know, that's the master schedule for the day for all the airplanes and students and instructors. So there's I think that we can get in touch with some technological advances that, one, make learning fun and also improve the quality of learning. So, you know, we had the SparkReel guys on last week. That's one way, you know, introducing new technologies, you know, to aid learning.
Well, and there's this isn't that new. I saw it in Oshkosh at least 2 years ago, if not 3 years ago, of this video recording device that CFIs would use. It's installed in the airplane.
Right.
And the student can see their control inputs, the GPS and all that outputs, and there's multiple cameras, and then they can replay it, kind of like when you go to these golf stores now and they photograph your golf swing and they analyze it and what you can do better. I think that's a wonderful thing. It's again, a few extra dollars. I don't know if students react well to it, but I got to believe it's something that many students would think is pretty cool and take it to their family. Hey, look at me. I was flying an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there's some really new cool things. There's some cool iPad apps, too, that I was looking at. And, you know, one I just discovered today, and it's like a whiteboard. So imagine, you know, you stand up in front of the student, and, you know, you're on a whiteboard. Your markers probably don't. Your dry erase markers probably are all out of ink. They're dry. The eraser doesn't erase. But the iPad has that. And it has an app that becomes its own dry erase board. And the neat thing is that you can log in and see what I'm doing. So you could have an iPad in your lap, just like me and you are right now. We're sitting at a table, you know, facing each other. Mm-hmm. I could be talking to you and say, hey, look at this. And it could be sitting in your lap. So now there's a lot more of a comfort level if we're sitting eye to eye. And it's more of an open discussion rather than, you know, an instructor sitting up at a chalkboard, the student sitting down, and, you know, you're looking down on the student and grilling them, you know, asking them questions. Now that's kind of a scary environment for a student.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'll have to get that app from you.
Yeah, right.
What do you think? You know, I go back. It was again a couple of years ago. AOPA started this mentor program.
Yeah,
which is, I think, an excellent concept, saying that people will do better if they have someone as a buddy, if you will.
Right.
Keep them motivated, help them through the tough spots, someone different than the CFI.
Right.
And they stopped doing it, so it obviously wasn't successful.
Right.
But what did you think about that, and is there a place for that in the training today?
I absolutely do think that there's a place for it. I just think that the execution of that program was pretty poor, you know, because it was just kind of a, you know, anybody could sign up, and then you were, you know, electronically matched with somebody, mm-hmm. and that person could live in Seattle, Washington. You live in Miami, Florida. So then you don't really know a whole lot about each other, and then, you know, one person calls the other. And it's more of like a hoorah speech, and you give your hoorah speech, you feel that you completed the mission, and then boom, it's the line's dead from, you know, both ends.
So how would you improve the program?
I think there's new ways of doing that. You can, you know, I keep going back to the social media thing, but, you know, you can have, everybody has a cell phone with a camera in it. What if you had...
Like, I don't, by the way.
Well...
But I will soon.
You are dating yourself again tonight.
Well, hey, you know what? I have a BlackBerry, and yeah. I have to admit... I don't like it. But it was great for email only.
Right.
You know, I don't use it for the internet. It just keeps me in quick email. I love that the... Not a virtual keyboard, real thing, but this isn't about that. I need to get a new phone. I know.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead. I digress.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so... There's new technology. So everybody is, well, will probably in the next couple years, you know, all the phones are smartphones. They're going to have cameras and ways to share aviation experience. Just like we were doing this week. You were filming videos, posting it to a Spark Reel, and then I was doing the same. You know, there are people from all over the country doing that, and we're all friends. We're all like aviation pen pals, but we're not writing to each other. We're making movies for each other and sharing them. People are commenting, inspiring others to go out. So I think it's actually a lot simpler of a problem than you know, having to be paired up and matched up and doing something like that. You know, there's another example is the Oshkosh this year. All the people that I follow on Twitter, they were tweeting each other. People are like, hey, it'd be great to meet you. Come in. You know, they're using Twitter as a connecting device and sharing little pieces of information. And, you know, ultimately it ended up with a face-to-face connection between a lot of people at Oshkosh. So I think that desire, you know, that's proof in the pudding right there. There's people that they want to do that. They want to help. You know, the Spark Reel flying group wouldn't exist if we didn't want to stay connected and help each other.
Well, and look at our flying club.
Right.
The thing that makes our flying club really different, and we don't, you know, we're not on the radio to try and push it or anything like that,
right.
But we have a very big focus and emphasis on community.
Exactly.
And social.
Right.
And it's we sometimes joke, gosh, someday we ought to fly, right?
Exactly.
We love to talk about flying. We love to eat. We love to get together. We love to talk safety. And we obviously all love to fly, but we don't always use the club planes for that or that, because that's almost sometimes feel a little bit secondary, which is kind of counterintuitive, but I think it speaks to a big need in the industry of the social aspect that is missing.
Right.
And I think that's why we see some of those challenges. Again, not the problem, but certainly one little piece of the puzzle that right. should be there if we're going to turn this thing around.
Right, exactly. So you're right, the club has done a great job of doing that. People join the club just for that element. I think we have more social members than flying members.
Well, definitely. And we have people that aren't even pilots.
Right.
But they're aviation enthusiasts and
right.
they love aviation. And we have people with their own airplanes.
Absolutely.
Right? So there is a need, and we say that all pilots share the passion for aviation. I think the pilots share a passion for community.
Right.
I love to fly, whether by myself or others, but if given the choice, I'd rather be with a flying buddy.
Right, exactly.
Right? Because it's fun to share this stuff.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Not forgetting it's also fun to share the cost.
Right, absolutely.
Right? There's today's Flying Magazine. I don't know if you've seen it. It's September 2012. By the way, look at the cover here. Again, a little digression, I apologize, but it has this new Corvallis TTX airplane, and it looks like a Picasso with oranges and golds and silvers and whites, and it's just a different look, which I think ultimately, I don't know if it's for me, but it's cool. It's like a tattoo.
Right. It is kind of a cool. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think that's new and refreshing. You haven't seen, I like that word or that phrase, new and refreshing in aviation. You know, it's something, if you pulled up, and I'm going to post this, you've inspired me to do something, use this technology and walk the walk. I'm going to post, I just took a picture of you holding up the Flying Cover magazine, or the Flying magazine. And for those of you who are on Facebook and Twitter, I'm going to post that right now, and you can search it, hashtag SimpleFlight. And take a look. It's kind of a neat paint job. So log into Twitter, and then if you're Facebook, you can follow Al Waterloo, and you'll see it there. But it's a really neat paint job. And yeah. I think that's the neat thing. It stands out. It's trying to be different. And,
I was going to talk about something that's in this issue. What were you talking about? You can tell
I derailed you on that. Sorry.
Well, no, I derailed myself by talking about it. But I'm trying to remember. There was a story I saw, and again, this just came, so I haven't even read the whole thing.
Yeah.
It'll come to me. We can talk about it later. One of the things that I did see also, by the way, is training schools opening outlets in malls, nowhere near an airport.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think
I like
of that?
That.
Do you like that?
Oh man, that's perfect.
Why do you like it?
Because it just proves that there's so many different ways that you can mesh aviation, and that's kind of what I try to do when I blog, is take two very different ideas and try to put them together. You know, I've done it with Real Housewives and flying a Hudson River trip. Or Starbucks and the airlines. You can really pair everything, two ideas together. So I really commend the fact that people are putting these flight training centers in the mall, and I love that, because that's bringing aviation outside of just the airport. Not a lot of people are going to come to Palwaukee Airport or Chicago Executive Airport without having a real good reason. They're not just going to pull in off the street. They're going to pull into the mall to go shopping or go get pizza at the food court.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, at first I thought, what? Is that desperation? But no, I think kids go to malls. Maybe, I don't know if they do as much as they used to, but I think it's just a new way to reach out to a new audience.
Yeah.
And I now remember what I was going to the Flying Magazine. They have an article on technological training tools. Again, I haven't read it, but these are the topics, and I think that the youth and those that we're targeting with our conversation now, they need these kinds of things because it's part of their everyday life. You know, you talked about earlier the social media. I talked about community and technology. Those are three areas that need to be brought together in a new and different way to now to message to this very, very important group.
Right, exactly. And
proficiency on a budget also talks about many ways to keep up your flying skills without spending much money.
Right.
So I'm interested to read that because I think that's another barrier
right.
that can be addressed with flying with a buddy.
Yeah, exactly. We have an email that came in, and this is from Mr. Lewis Bowers.
I know the name.
You know the name? Yeah. He was on the show last week.
Yes, he was.
He's the guy that created the flying group. It's on sparkreel.com. Check it out. It's really cool. We got a lot of cool content. I think Lewis wins the award for having the most videos up there, and that's pretty cool. But anyway, he just wanted to share a quick story with us and to the rest of the listeners. But when he was in sixth grade, he had a class project that was, what would you do if you had $1 million? What would you do, Mark?
If I had $1 million, it would go toward aviation. I'd buy a plane.
You buy a plane, yeah. Well, that's good. Well, Lewis had the same idea behind this, but guess what he would do with it?
I couldn't begin to guess. Again, that's one of those things that should stay off the radio.
Well, thank you for your censorship, and you know, you have the Constitution allows you the right to speak your mind, but we have to thank you. But Lewis wanted to start a flying school.
Very cool.
And that was really neat. So what he was saying that is he ended up meeting with one of his with a flight instructor at Northwest Aviation, which I think was an old flight school out of the Schaumburg Airport.
Yep, it was indeed.
And that flight instructor ended up taking Lewis and his mother up to the Palwaukee Tower here. We're sitting right underneath it. And a month or so later, he ended up, you know, going flying in a Beechcraft Duchess.
Wow, started in a twin.
Yeah, absolutely. Go big, go, you know, go bold, you know, go big or go home. But he thought that was a pretty amazing experience, and he's never forgotten that. So that was a great example of how engaged the CFI was in this connecting.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in a position where I hire salespeople in the technology field, and I always ask them, If you could pick any job, regardless of qualifications, what would you take? What would you want to be? And then they give me an answer, and I say, okay, now let's take money out of it, and that regardless of what you picked, you're going to be paid $1 million a year.
Nice.
And my goal is to see what are they passionate about. The first one usually is some job that pays them a lot of money.
Right.
And the next one is, well, geez, if I could get paid $1 million, I'd be a teacher, I'd be a golfer, I'd be
right.
whatever, a pilot. And I owe my advice to them was, well, then why aren't you doing that if that's your passion? And I wasn't even following my own advice, right, which is something that's now I'm changing. I'm trying to do more in aviation because that is my passion.
Right.
And, you know, that's the other thing is, are people picking careers and all based on passion, or are they doing it based on money? And
right.
I don't know the answer to the question for today's generation.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some of them just want jobs, right? It's not just that easy to crap out of college and get a job. But
right, exactly.
I know just going through with my son, who thankfully got a wonderful job offer, but it, money was a part of it.
Right, right? Absolutely.
And plus culture. You know, you want to have a good culture and all that.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's a huge issue behind all that because, you know, money is a part of it. And when you're paying pilots now, you know, tough wages to make a living on, you know, there's really no incentive. You know, if you can do, if you really love flying airplanes, it costs a ton of money, and all of a sudden you're going to make $20,000 a year, you know, for your first airline job, probably less than that as a flight instructor, depending on how you do it. But, you know, you can, you know, you look at that, or, you know, I don't, here's a perfect example. I was making $22,000 a year as an airline pilot. You know, I've been there, and it's tough. And I was going to, you know, I have a lot of friends who were once got business degrees, and I'd go to their parties, and you know, me and another pilot were the only pilots there, and other, you know, career pilots, and then everybody else was everybody else is in business. So you were at this party, and then you look around, and it was like banker, 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 accountant, accountant, banker, pilot, accountant. And all of a sudden, I remember sitting there, and I'm like, wow, I went into the wrong field. You know, here's people talking about, you know, making, you know, buying a condo. They, you know, they went to the BMW dealership. You know, there are people my age, you know, at the time I was 25, and here they are, they're buying their first place and having a good time. And, you know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, I make, you know, diddly squat. And then here's my buddy next to me who just got laid off, you know, furloughed from his $22,000 a year job. So, you know, it was such a, you know, kicking between the legs, you know, talk to these people, because it was almost like, yeah, you want to keep up with them and you have such a high level, you know, skill set just like they do. But, you know, there's not much you could really show for it other than...
Well, from a money perspective, but again, and maybe it's easy from this chair to say, well, they're probably sitting there very happy with their income, but thinking, what a cool job you have.
Right, exactly.
If they're pilots at heart, right? If they love that, if they have that passion. And I, you know, there's a few people at our flying club that say, when we grow up, we want to be Al Waterloo.
Yeah, right.
26 years old, 5,000 hours, already flown for the airlines, flies a nice corporate gig now.
Right, exactly.
And has fun with flight instructing. You know, it's not a bad thing.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, right. You know, I don't think it... I always had fun with it, but there was this, you know, there was a social element, you know, and I think it was kind of neat because you were the only pilot in the group at these parties, but,
right,
you know, so everybody had lots of questions for you. And then you also kind of try to be humble and just like, hey, you know what, it's actually, you know, and this is one thing that I regret. And I try, you know, I was trying to be pretty humble and just say, oh, yeah, it's just another job. It's just like you having your job. But, you know, it was a little bit... Deep down inside, I knew I was kind of maybe doing the wrong thing by saying that, because I really loved it, even though, you know, it didn't pay the best. But, you know, I guess I was not given enough credit, you know, maybe to the profession and, you know, the actual skill set that was being, you know, that you have.
And we can't put aside the money part of it.
Right.
Both the investment to become a pilot and then the return from an income perspective.
Right.
But I just hate to see everything placed on that. That's my only point there.
Right.
And again, easy to speak from this chair.
Right.
Exactly. You know, whatever.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. You know, that's a... but there was a... you know, but there are the one thing that kind of surprised me, and you know, we talked about this earlier in the show, but going back to the lady that came in, you know, the affordability of flying, you know, there's tons and tons of scholarships out there right now, you know, to help fund aviation, you know, your flight training. You know, we're hoping to start a scholarship and do that, but you know, details are still being worked out. But you know, I think it's such an important factor. You know, money is a big factor in this, and if we can nullify that issue for somebody, that, you know, a lot of scholarships do that. You know, that's kind of a neat way to pursue. And you know, what my understanding is that there's not a whole lot of applicants for these scholarships, so your chances of getting an aviation scholarship are really high.
Yeah, and that's what Pam was saying when she came in, is, you know, kids that love aviation aren't aware of the resources and the help available. And here, she wasn't sure the exact amount, but lots of scholarships adding up to tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
She said they had 50 people apply for one, which was kind of cool.
Right.
But again, a citation, typewriting, flight safety this, flight safety that, for ANPs,
right,
for the pilots, licenses. It was just amazing. My jaw dropped because I wasn't aware. So that means people that are, again, outside the fence aren't aware that these financial scholarships and therefore assistance is there. But if they don't know about it,
they're never going to apply.
They're not, and they won't apply, and they may not get involved with aviation. If they knew there's people willing to pay them,
right,
to get into this industry, that may change.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I like that. There's one thing that she mentioned, and I'm glad she brought this up, is that one student, you know, when all the scholarships were awarded, she had to introduce everybody to a crowd. And right. One of them was really proud of the fact, it was a guy, that he was a member of Women in Aviation.
Right.
And in college, I was a pretty big member, active member of Women in Aviation, too.
Really?
Yeah. It was actually a really good time. There was they have a huge, absolutely huge networking and career event.
So why did you do that, very seriously?
Because there was a lot of, there was a lot of opportunity. It was a big career fair, so all the airlines that you wanted to talk to were there. And the funny part is that, you know, you go there and it's promoting women in aviation, which is a absolutely wonderful thing. But as a guy there, you stuck out.
You know, so sure, I would guess so.
Yeah. So you go to these booths and whatnot, you know, to the airline recruiting booths, and they're like, you know, you're one of five guys that were at this convention. But it was actually a lot of fun. It was all about the
community. I like the odds.
Yeah, right. It was all about the community and about all this, and it was just a really it was a really neat thing. And you know, there's a whole organization, you know, a nationwide organization. Then the University of Illinois had its own chapter, and there was just mm-hmm. you know, there's a higher guy to girl ratio at the local chapter, and we'd go bowling and pumpkin picking and stuff like that.
Pumpkin picking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, don't let your imagination go wild on that one. But there's an orchard right next to the Champaign Airport. That's why.
Oh, okay.
And we'd go there, we'd pick up pumpkins, and then, you know, have this big pumpkin carving, you know, night.
I don't know why, but this is making me think of an old sitcom that was called WKRP in Cincinnati. And they had Thanksgiving, and people that used to watch this already know where I'm going with this, but the station did a turkey drop from airplanes or from helicopters. Right. And I'm sorry. And then basically, you know, they're dropping these turkeys. They were live turkeys, and I just...
Jeez.
I just remember the station manager saying, "As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly." And they were just flying out. I'm sure we can find that on YouTube.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, we might need to do that here.
Yeah.
A club event. No. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm looking at the clock here. I can't believe we've got only 20 minutes left. This has been the fastest hour and 40 minutes that I've ever spent.
Right.
Our audience may be thinking a little bit different, but, I'm taking notes down on action items and reach out to youth, you know, through the school events and all that, break down the fence. I'm thinking about the style of the airplane I wrote down, you know, that technology in the airplane and making it cool, and maybe it's even the paint job. Those are things that can help attract
right.
them. Just again, make it look like a tattoo. I don't know.
It's a little bit different. It's,
yeah.
That's the thing, is it needs to be different.
It needs to be different. But again, you look at the cars that we see them advertise, and some of these inexpensive cars, but they have, you know, the music going and the their messaging is clearly to a different generation.
Right.
And so that's the messaging we need to do, and it doesn't have to be expensive. And that's the other thing. We have to cut costs. So as part of reaching out, I want to make sure that we're telling these people about the resources that are available to make, first of all, to initiate the spark that it maybe it becomes a dream, and then show them how they can achieve the dream.
Sure.
And that may sound very basic and stuff we've been doing, but I don't think we have been.
Right.
I know I haven't.
Right.
You know, I just, when people talk to me, I'm going to do a quick tangential type thing or a digression. They have the Aviation Career Expo, ACE, at this airport annually. I don't know if they're going to do it this year. I think they probably will. And they do Saturday morning. They have guest speakers, and all the flight schools and the colleges come in. And there was a young man at the show last year, and I was just standing around. I was talking to as many young people as I could, and he just came up to me. He said, "I want to fly so bad, but we can't afford it." Came from a single parent home, no money, and I wanted to and didn't know. You know, Mark, you got to be careful. I wanted to basically say, "Okay, I'm going to pay for your
right.
flying lessons. Come up with $10,000 or whatever." But it just tugged at my heartstrings, and I want to see what we can do to make some of those dreams come true.
Right, absolutely. Right?
Because they're out there.
Right.
And they're in this case, couldn't get in the field because of money.
Right, exactly.
But in the other cases, we just got to, again, kind of ignite the spark that I think exists. They just don't know it yet.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
You have a look about you. Is there something that you – I don't know if you picked up something here. Or?
Well, I had a there was to finish on your thought of you know, how do we reach out to that and do that? I think we talked about some scholarship opportunities and things like that, and you know how it's very, you know, you go to an airport and you see people and you know they're tugging at your heart and you want them to make them pay. But I think that, you know, we've talked about this, so we still have to firm up some details. But, you know, a lot of the scholarships out there right now are, you know, for additional flight training. So people that are already pilots, but there's a pretty big capture rate of trying to find, you know, find somebody who doesn't have that, who wants it, and then, you know, rather than having a scholarship that's for additional flight training, but have one that's for primary flight training.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of a personal goal that I'm trying to take on, and hopefully you know that we'll have some more details on. But the big idea behind that is to use technology and, you know, to make this an experience rather than just getting a license or a rating or whatever. You know, make a long-lasting impression, you know, so that's something that they'll never forget.
That's an excellent idea, because, and I don't know what the specifics are, but instead of just saying, here's dollars to put toward a CFI and dollars to put to a flight school to rent an airplane, maybe there is some dollars to take, I don't know if you call it the concierge level or
right.
something else, but to make it an experience and
right.
not just a pilot's license, as you just stated.
Right.
There's something there, I think. And it's worth a try. That's the other thing.
Absolutely. We just got to try it.
That's right. If you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got.
Exactly.
So we got to change that.
Right. But one of the neat things of that we think of, the new way of flight, aviation experience, in my opinion, and this is kind of one thing that I've been having a lot of fun with, and that's, you know, I almost think that flying is like an iPad. And what do you mean by that? Well, you know, you have.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that? Well, there's when you get an iPad, you know, people are you mull over the question: should I get an iPad or should I not? And the answer should be yes. You know, but the question, the defense is, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. But you know, 3 months after owning the iPad, you know, it's something that you can't live without. So it's totally customizable. And so your experience and someone's experience in aviation is totally customizable. You know, so you get your license. You don't know what you're going to do with it, but over time it's going to let you tell tell exactly what you're going to do with it and how you can exercise it. And here's one more thing that's a customizable experience using technology in aviation. I got two things actually. I got a new tablet, and I've been Nexus 7 tablet. One of our students that I flew with last week and a listener of the show, he recommended this, and it's kind of a new. I'm almost starting to like this a lot more than an iPad. Can you believe that? And four flights in jeopardy. But we'll save that for another show. But there's a lot of technology, and there's one of my good friends, Pat Brennan. And now here you go. Pat. Who is Pat Brennan to Mark Eppner? But
all I know is I've heard this name 450,000 times in the last 2 weeks. Who is this guy? He's on the news. He's more than anyone on the news.
Yeah, exactly. But so the cool one of the cool things that he's been doing is he's big into technology, and this is one way that he has fun in aviation. He's developed his own aviation app on his Google phone or Android phone.
Okay.
And he's found a little problem that exists within his aviation world, and he developed an app to fix it. So that's a cool thing, is that you're the destiny of your own problems, you know what I mean? So I thought that was just a really neat merge of technology and aviation, and you can get your fix on both, use technology to fix your problem to make your aviation experience even better. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of a neat.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think technology is the hot area, and where we're seeing most of where today's young worker goes in the direction of.
Right.
And so, if we can bring technology to aviation, you're bringing people to aviation.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Actually, when I say that, I start to think about video games and all that, and wondering how many of these new entrance into the workforce would want to fly a drone, sitting in the home with a joystick and a screen, and maybe that's tomorrow's pilot. I hope not, but I guess we need those as well, and that's still aviation.
Right, exactly. Well, that's a great way the flight simulator would fit in.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Right? It's all kind of connected, and there's a lot of expansion for technology within something like that, and a lot of that leaves a lot of room for expansion for aviation itself.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that's kind of neat. So
you said two things. I think you only brought up one there.
This tablet, that was one, and then this customizing an app, that was another.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to make a little endorsement actually for this Nexus tablet. It's considerably smaller than a iPad, so it's the size of a Kindle or so, Kindle Fire maybe.
Yeah, a lot thinner.
Yeah, a lot thinner, a lot lighter. Here, hold this. See how much lighter that is?
Yeah.
It's really nice, and I don't know if you've ever actually had to use your iPad while flying to figure out, pull up charts and things like that, and it's actually, the iPad is kind of it's a bulky unit while you're flying.
But and I appreciate that, with the size and all.
Right.
So I'm looking at this. Is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. There's an app, and all these flight planning apps, like let's say you have 4Flight, and Jepson has their own.
Right.
And then you have flightplan.com as well as Garmin. Garmin has their own.
Oh, that's announced. Actually, Garmin is in today's thing here. I forget what they put in here, but they've got something new as well. Anyway, I digress.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. Well, anyway, this Garmin app, I've been playing around with it. This thing is so cool. It's going to be, it operates, the way that it operates the same way as the Garmin 650 touchscreen GPS. So the same keystrokes for the way that you want to load in a waypoint or load in a departure or a flight plan, if you have a fix that's halfway down your flight plan, you can highlight that, hit direct to. There's a direct to function. It's a great. I know Garmin puts out a simulator for the 650.
Yeah.
But this would be a great tool for people to do. And you know what the cost of the tablet was? How much do you think that was?
Gosh, I I'm just going to throw a number out, $400.
It was $199.
No way.
Yeah. The Garmin app is pretty much the same price as a ForeFlight chart subscription and all that.
$150
$150. It has a GPS that's built in. It's Wi-Fi only, just so there's no cellular data or 3G data at the moment. But the Garmin app lacks just a little bit than over ForeFlight, but I'd imagine in the next year all these flight planning apps are just going to be bulletproof. And I'm actually getting really excited about this Garmin app, and especially at this price point. So we have ARC Flying Club actually has a couple 650 Garmin touchscreen units in there. People struggle learning this, and this is actually, you know, they want to get a new tablet, but the iPad is a little cost prohibitive. So this could be a pretty neat new option. I'm actually really excited. I'm still playing around with it, and
we'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. But get excited about stuff like that. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I'm playing here, and I got to get back to the show.
you really want to play? Yeah, right.
It's new technology.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it has all your iPad features of getting movies and music and stuff on it, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So what are you going to do different starting tomorrow?
What am I going to do different? Well,
yeah, how are you going to help the cause?
I'm really excited to use this new, communicate to people. So there's two things I'm going to do. I'm going to try to be really creative using technology to reach out and transmit information, you know, which I've been trying to do already, but I'm going to make more of a valid effort, you know, to do that, post more videos, and just create the excitement of flying. Show, you know, or take higher quality videos that really captures the excitement of flying. Plus, I've actually kind of there's a student that or not a student, but somebody that I've flown with, and he's 10 years younger than me. We've gone up and we've gone flying, and I've tried to make a conscious effort to call him once a month and see how he's doing, and he's really close to soloing before he had to move off to college. But, you know, I just want to, you know, it's important for me to keep reaching out to him, you know, without him prompting me to call him. So that, I want to make that, you know, get really disciplined with something like that. You know, just pick somebody that I, you know, see a lot of myself and when I was his age, and just kind of, you know, pay it forward.
That's a great idea. And I'm going to call, and I promise to do in September, assuming they want me, is 3 high school presentations.
Yeah.
And so you know, I'm going to go back to writing blogs.
Yeah.
I used to do it more often. And I'll be honest with you, I was frustrated when I went to some of, let's say, the associations that represent the pilot community. And
right.
Offered my assistance, and they just weren't interested. And
right.
That's their prerogative. I'm fine with that.
Right.
But I thought, okay, maybe I can't impact things. But again, this last 2 weeks ago when I stopped in that observation area, I really felt like I created 3 future pilots.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so I came away saying, you know what, I want to do more of that. And
right.
Even if it's only a small percentage, if I can 5%, I just talk to 500 or 100 kids and come away with 5 new pilots, you know, it's something that didn't exist before.
Right, exactly. No, I applaud your efforts on that, because there's very few people. There's organizations that do that, but just for an individual, just a GA pilot that feels strong enough about it to go out on their own without being prompted by an organization to do that, I think that's, you know, that says a lot about you. So that's awesome. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, you bet. Well, it says a lot about our passion, our right. industry, if you will.
Exactly. So what are you what are you going to do that you're really excited about when reaching out to these guys, these schools? What are you going to do that you're most excited about?
Well, I think twofold. One is to bring them into it through audiovisual,
right?
You know, videos, still shots that I've taken. The other thing that I think if I believe others, like when I do the Young Eagles, I do ground school a lot at Young right. Eagles because I haven't always had a plane to take them up. And people comment to me, they like my energy when talking to kids. And it's not fake, right?
Right.
I get excited about this.
Exactly.
So I think the thing that I'm going to have the most fun with doing, what I think will have the most impact, is marrying the videos and the things that I think people will react to the energy of how cool is this.
Right.
You know, I've always had good empathy. So what are the other people I'm talking to? What are they feeling? I put myself in their shoes. I think I can do that. And we'll see. And I may have to refine the message. Actually, I'm going to spend some time talking to some teenagers and then get feedback from them.
Right.
Did this resonate at all? Or what do you think? Or they tell me to go pound sand, then I have to revamp the message.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, I think we've set up a really nice platform for our continued pursuit of finding amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.
Well, and to that point, in the flying club, we had a 16-year-old on his birthday.
Yes.
He soloed. And how cool is that?
It's really exciting.
So maybe next week I'll reach out to him. Maybe he can be a guest so people won't just hear our voices.
Right.
I think to your point when you created the show, amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.
Right.
You know, it's our duty to bring them to the forefront and let them be the spokespeople and the people driving the results too.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I think that's really, really, really important, you know. And then they have the ways that we could tap into them to figure out what the easiest ways of you know, reaching out to individuals like them are. You
well,
know?
And it's the old I tell one person or I tell two people who tell two people to two people.
Right.
Matter of fact, I don't know if you guys used to play this game. If I gave you a penny on the first day of a month, and then on the second day I gave you 2 pennies,
right? Yeah.
And the third day 4 pennies. Do you know how much you'd have at the end of 30 days?
That would be a ton.
If I remember right, it's like millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. It's just penny, but doubling. And that
right.
that progression of telling people who will tell that infect other people, I think, is very, very powerful and something we need to get going. Because right now, it's too one-off to gain any huge momentum.
Right, exactly. Oh. Well, you know what? I can't believe it. It seems like we just started the show and it's 2 hours later.
That's impossible. There's something wrong with this clock.
I know, exactly.
Take your tablet back.
Maybe somebody took control of our TV and
yeah, right. And that's the only thing we got to change with that Outer Limits thing. It says TV, it says an hour, but again, if anyone grew up in the same time I did, that Outer Limits, I love that beginning. It really almost supplanted Twilight Zone as like, ooh, this is really scary and cool.
Right, exactly. I think that was it was kind of a neat, thanks for reconnecting me with that, but.
My pleasure.
I think that.
So any big plans for the week ahead in aviation?
So for the week ahead, I've got some exciting flying lessons to give. There's going to be some, we're going to do some, you know, expose people to some new airplanes that they've really wanted to get their hands on, which is kind of really cool. These people are really excited, and we're going to go stretch these airplanes' legs a little bit and get them into it. And I'm thinking about another blog article. I've got my wheels churning.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to, if you go into simpleflight.net, see a new blog post come up probably in the middle of the week. And yeah, we'll just hopefully maybe I'll pull over at the viewing area here at Palwaukee and sit and wait for somebody to show up and
there
have
you
lunch
go.
With
they're,
them.
They're there a lot.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm going to do?
What's that?
I've been always saying, you know what, I need to go get my commercial license, just not because of anything other than it's another rating, it improves my proficiency. I want to take the knowledge test. I don't know if I'm going to do it this week, but I am going to go through my DVDs that I have and go through some study buddy tests and put myself in a position in the very near future. I'd say before September is out, I'll have the knowledge test passed, and I'll have started my commercial training.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
That's my little resolution for this show, too. Be practice what I preach.
Yeah, right. Using his accountability, which is great.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Well, I think we did a great job. We've set up a great platform for our for the next show. Continued pursuit of finding amazing people in aviation. Mark, it was a great show. It went by fast.
It did indeed, especially I'm very tired. I've been not sleeping much the last few days with that little grandchild, but like I said, excited to come back and talk with you and talk about airplanes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much.
You too.
It's I'm Al Waterloo. With me, Mark Eppner.
Hello. Or goodbye, goodbye, whatever.
This is Simple Flight Radio on AthanoLive.com. Thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a great time. And look forward for some more amazing people doing amazing things next week on AthanoLive.com at 8 p.m. All right. Happy trails, everybody, and blue skies.
Have a great week.
Simple Flight. From ultralights to the edge of space, the Wright brothers flew in 1903, and aviation is still finding new ways to advance. Aviation is fun, it's business, and it's full of opportunity. Join Al Waterloo as he talks with amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.